Thanks, Rob. I apologize for my voice. I'm recovering from a cold. So normally, my voice is normally about an octave higher than this. What I'm going to do in the next 10 minutes is, as the title says, give you an overview and an update of where things stand with the fundamentals of medicine and dentistry. Some in the room have heard versions of this speech before. I think there are some in the room who have never heard this before, so my apologies for those who've heard all this before. But there'll be some new stuff, I promise. So this is a good question to ask oneself about a curriculum that is currently in place that basically is successful, but there are problems with it. And the strategic planning exercise that you heard about from Rob identified sort of three perhaps major concerns. And first is the problem, not unique to McGill, of information overload and the science of medicine. If one takes the publications in the medical library since 1994, piles them one on top of another, it becomes a very large pile, added to a pile that was already large to start with. And how does the poor doctor in practice cope with all of this? So what does every doctor need to know? We are proposing to use the Medical Council of Canada clinical presentations scheme to help define the limits of what we should include in our curriculum. And I'll come back to that in a moment. The problem of family medicine at McGill is one of, family medicine has historically had a low profile, no profile, or a negative profile, depending on where you look. And certainly this has been a concern on the part of the people who pay for our medical school, the ministries of health and the taxpayer, as well as those who think about what our responsibility is to those whom we serve. And the principal thing that you will see that we're proposing to do is insert a real experience in family medicine for every medical student from day one of the curriculum. And then finally, in the current curriculum, since the development of BOM in 1994, the physicianship program has grown up. It has been very successful on many levels, but a concern that many of us have is that it and BOM exist in parallel universes. And there are lots of chances for very effective collaboration, reinforcement of messages that are completely lost under the current system. So we are proposing to marry these more closely, as you'll see. So although I'm the chair of this committee, I'm not the only person on this committee. And these, the people on the committee, many of whom are in the room, are chosen, A, to represent areas that are important in an undergraduate curriculum, B, people who have previous engagement in BOM, and people who are new to the game, and people who will answer my emails as well. And for the most part, the people on this committee have all contributed very constructively to the to what you'll hear about. So I can blame them, but it's really my fault. So this is a somewhat simpler to read version of that color page that's in your handout. And the basic idea with FMD is that we retain the organ system-based arrangement that we have in BOM. And starting at, here we are. So this is September of first year. This is Christmas. This is the summer, September of second year, and then Christmas of second year. The first 18 months. And you can see from the titles that in many ways this resembles the current structure of BOM, with some important exceptions, and I'll deal with those as we advance. So what's new? So let me come back to this clinical presentations idea. The clinical presentations, for those of you who don't know, grew out of an idea that a number of colleagues in Calgary had a number of years ago, which was to sit down and construct a list of all the reasons people went to the doctor, which presumably is a metric of what doctors ought to know. And so they did this, and they consulted with many people across the country, including people in this room, and eventually came up with a list of 120-odd clinical presentations, reasons people go to the doctor. And this has now been adopted by the Medical Council of Canada as the basis for their qualifying exams. In other words, the exam that every medical graduate has to pass in order to practice medicine in the country. And although imperfect, it's actually, I think, a very credible attempt to define the limits of what every medical graduate ought to know. And so rather than taking the approach which we historically have of, well, let's see, we should talk about this and we have an expert on that and sort of cobbling a curriculum together like that in such a fashion, what we're proposing to do with FMD is to use this as a framework right from the get-go to decide what to include and, more importantly, what can be left out of a curriculum. So what this actually looks like in practice, I'll just show you. I've taken these 126 clinical presentations and divided them up according to the organ system-based blocks you saw in the previous couple of slides. And so if you go into, the circulation block, these are the kinds of things we think that we need to be able to equip students to deal with: hypertension in childhood, hypertension in the elderly, malignant hypertension, so forth and so forth. And so the idea is that what we're teaching in the circulation block should be related in some reasonably direct way to one or other of these clinical presentations, and not just because we have somebody who gives a very effective presentation on such and such, or because this person's always done it, or whatever. So that's a novelty in the new, or the proposed new curriculum. The second thing that's different about FMD as opposed to the basis of medicine is, those of you who teach in the basis of medicine now will know that we more or less teach the normal in first year, and in the fall of second year we do the abnormal, pathology, pharmacology, and so forth. We're proposing to not do that anymore, but in fact to, within each of these organ system blocks, teach normal and abnormal, not side by side exactly, but in close succession. And the real hope, or my hope for this, is this will help students see why learning about the cardiac cycle is not just an exercise in, well, that's interesting physiology, but is actually something that a physician practicing needs to have in their head as they deal with somebody in heart failure. Now, whether this will work or not is another question, but it seems to me eminently sensible, and most that I've talked to agree. So effectively what this means whereas in BOM we have Unit 8, which is all the abnormal in the fall of second year, Unit 8 disappears and it's sprinkled throughout the entire 18 months. Another important change in FMD is what we're doing at the beginning of medical school. And so currently in the BOM unit system, Unit 1 is in effect a course in cellular biology. Clearly cellular biology is a fundamental part of medical and dental practice, but it isn't the only thing that medical and dental practice is about. And so we have, from the title you see, are trying to expand the horizons of our beginning graduates to see that, yes, medicine's about molecules, but there's other things that happen in medicine as well. And you'll hear more about this from Ann Anderman a little bit later in the afternoon. Now, the longitudinal family medicine program, in order to really create an actual experience for students in family medicine, one can't sit in a classroom and talk about it, but students have to actually see what it's like firsthand. And this means devising some means to allow 200 medical students to be in family medicine practices in some regular way throughout their first year. And the major implication of that, I will pick at random a week from the circulation block, block C, to show you how this works. So every afternoon, a fifth of the class is going to be somewhere in the city of Montreal in a family medicine practice, clinic, whatever. And so in order to organize this, we have to divide the class into quintiles, A, B, C, D, and E. And so on Tuesday afternoon, quintile B is off in family medicine, Wednesday afternoon, quintile C, and so forth. The corollary of this is that on any given afternoon, one has only part of the class present to do something else. And so anything that one wants to give to the whole class at once has to be confined to the morning. And that carries with it organizational difficulties as well as a necessary compression of our available lecture time. And you'll hear more about the details of this from Lenny Lalla later in the afternoon. Another change in FMD is we're proposing to advance teaching of the basic clinical method that all physicians use, interviewing, physical examination, from second year to first year. And we are specifically proposing to integrate this in a very explicit way with each of the organ system blocks. So, for example, when we're dealing with the circulatory system, we will expose students and teach students about the examination of the cardiovascular system and so forth. So, again, back to my, I'll keep using this same week in the circulation block just to keep things clear. So, in this particular week, we have quintile D and quintile E will have an afternoon session on the cardiovascular physical exam. Quintiles A, B, and C have it, and either it's either the week before or the week after. I've forgotten which. And again, you'll hear more about the details of this from Don Boudreau later in the afternoon. If we go back to this diagram for a second, you'll see that in blue there are two clinical method weeks in first year and in second year. And these will be weeks devoted to essentially consolidation, refresher, review, evaluation of how students have mastered or not these clinical method skills. The physicianship basis of medicine divide, we are trying to bridge by no longer separating physicianship from everything else, but to embed it within what goes on in FMD. So to take again my fourth week of the circulation block, during this week there happens to be something called tobacco control, policy making, and health outcomes, which is of obvious immediate relevance to a student who has heard 2 days previously about the pathology of atherosclerosis. And so as much as we can, we are asking people who are involved in teaching these topics to not teach in airy generalities, but to actually show the concrete application in the real world of these important principles of public health, physicianship, and so forth. And then the final piece that will be considerably different will be how we evaluate students. And the two primary things here, again, if I go back to this schedule here, the green stripes represent 6 reflection and evaluation weeks that have been placed throughout the 18 months. And during these weeks, we'll do 2 things. One is we will have some traditional examinations, but the difference will be that the examinations will be progressively cumulative, so that by reflection and evaluation week 3, for example, we will be asking students to we will test students not simply on what they learned the previous month, but everything they've learned to date. And so, in a sense, it'll keep getting harder and harder as things go on. But, hey, you know, our business is cumulative. You can't learn about the nervous system for Friday and forget it all on Monday. You've got to keep this in your head. Now, there's going to be an obvious difficulty in how we can devise exams that are fair and reasonable, but that's an interesting challenge. The R part of this, of these weeks, we're still discussing exactly how this is going to work, but the basic idea is that we want students to also have an opportunity to reflect on the experience of what they're going through in learning to become physicians and dentists, and to think about the application of some of the broader physicianship topics to items they've learned about in the organ system blocks they're passing through. And we're going to ask them to write, each one of them, short papers on a defined series of topics, which they will have evaluated by faculty as well as by a couple of their peers. So we're going to introduce, for the first time at McGill, a little bit of peer assessment, which is widely used at many other medical schools. And we are meant to be a self-regulating profession, but we don't do a whole lot of self-regulation in the medical school as now. So that's, in broad strokes, are the kinds of changes that are being proposed, and the concrete details are evolving. And I leave you with this optimistic worldview from somebody who was on the scene considerably before 1994, and happy to take questions or comments. So the question is, where's Marie? Marie's and I have been grappling with this recently about whether we have courses or whether we have a promotion period that we're dealing with. So, I mean, that is going to be an issue, but I don't think an unsolvable one. Oh, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, why 5 days? Just because that was, you know, a convenient way to think of it, because it's a week, that's right. I mean, there is also, I think, a need for us to give people a little breather as well. So those weeks are meant to be relatively unstructured, except that there will be exams. But yes, there is in theory more time to be found there.
Colin, in your Tuesday and Wednesday breakdown quintiles, you have cardiovascular teaching. You foresee that as large group teaching, or is that to be broken down into small groups?
No, the hope is, or the idea is that much of the small group teaching that will happen in the afternoons around the physical exam and around other things will be probably with groups of students similar to the current curriculum small groups. That's to say 15 or so. Now, I can tell you that we've done a little bit of this physical exam teaching in Unit 6 for the last several years. Fraser Moore and I have been mainly behind this. And it actually works surprisingly well. You would think that there's too many people and the rooms won't work and blah, 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 but it actually works very well, and students, in fact, really learn something. So I think it's feasible. John.
So, Colin, you have the Medical Council of Canada objective that they must learn, which is a lot of material, but now we've interspersed clinical aspects throughout, and you said there was a very compressed timeline or space. Are you going to be able, have you figured out whether you'll be able to get all those facts in a compressed schedule?
And clearly that's the big challenge. And there are many people have expressed a very legitimate concern about, in particular, the scientific foundation. And I think it is doable, but one needs to be very judicious about how it's done. There's no question about it. If you go through hour by hour in BOM, which I've done a number of times, including the unit that I've been responsible for a dozen years, there's no question that there's a level of detail very often creeps in there, which is way beyond what any even specialist physician needs to know. And I think we can effectively boil it down to the essential, but it's not easy.
So will there be a general oversight then to make sure that everything is balanced out?
That's the idea.
Individual units operating.
Yeah. So, I mean, to give you examples of that, In the last couple of months, Elaine Davis and I have gone through the anatomy teaching and looked at that in some detail about, you know, what will change, what will stay the same, can we actually fit all the students into the anatomy lab at the right time and so forth. Last week I had a very constructive meeting with Mark McKee and colleagues in histology to look at what's proposed and what they think can be done. Well, no, we really need another something there. Oh, we can leave that out, that's okay. Dave Ragsdale, who I think is not here, today is holding a meeting next week with the various people who teach intermediate metabolism in BOM to sit down and try and figure out, you know, can we do this with this amount of time and what will it look like?
Would there be value in looking at a process similar to the existing clinical presentation as with basic science?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable. Of course, the devil's in the details, and I don't think anybody would disagree that every physician should know something about the structure of the cell. The question is, what level of detail do you stop at? Yeah. And that, you know, that's the difficulty. Don. I see, okay, yeah. Right.
And also the director of ICS 2% in Montreal General Hospital. He won't be responsible for those sessions. So I'm not sure if that was a concern of yours, but
we certainly are there.
Yeah. Bernard. So, I mean, I think that the pressures or the atmosphere, whatever the right word is, that have promoted the idea of specialization within our medical class are not going to disappear. And indeed, it'll be interesting to see what effect changing the first 18 months will even have on that. So I'm not at all concerned about that. The issue about the clinician scientist is I think is a very difficult one, and my own view is that we don't create clinician scientists during the classroom part of our medical school experience. They come in the summer. They come other ways. But can I prove that? No. But I think it's one of these sort of things we can argue about endlessly. I don't think what I would hope, in fact, is that what we may be able to do, in fact, is do exactly the opposite of what your fear may be, is by putting the normal and the abnormal, the physiology and the pathology, the pathophysiology of therapeutics, in close proximity, students will walk away seeing much more clearly the value of understanding the basic biology. Right now, it's too often one hears from students, why did we learn all that stuff in first year? It was so useless. And I think if we can select and approximate the two, people will see, that's why medicine is a scientific pursuit. John. Sure. Okay. Got it.
So, Colin, given the fact that there might be some pruning of the scientific facts that a student needs to know, there's some benefit into selecting students getting into medical school to have a certain background in science to start with. And I know we've revised how we select students. Is there any attempt to dovetail this curriculum with the selection committee of students that come into the field?
Well, so the question is, if we're changing what we teach, are we going to change the kind of students we admit? And I think the short answer to that is that there's actually been a lot of fruitful discussion going on about looking at the admission criteria, the prerequisite admission criteria, which haven't changed in our faculty since Osler's day. I think that's right, Charmaine, anyways. And indeed, one wonders sort of what the basis for them may be. And carrying that further, there are a number of people who have become quite interested in the idea of actually constructing something like what Salim was talking about, a sort of list of scientific concepts, ideas that students ought to have know something about before they start medical school. But that's not going to happen tomorrow, but the discussion has certainly started. Celine.
I think I would just add that we are reviewing, we will review the requisites. So if we change it today, it would
Oh, Kevin. I never know if that's a compliment or what that, but he was thank you. Right, so the question is, how does one integrate this change of what happens in the next 2.5 years of our undergraduate curriculum? And, I mean, one very interesting idea, which Terry Hebert and I have been talking about, is whether we should be teaching more explicitly scientific topics in the final year and 2.5 years than we do now. And I think that that's an idea certainly worth looking at.